This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Subscribe to the podcast Beyond Politics. They host some of the biggest names and smartest minds. Beyond Politics is from a former Democratic congressman who helped ignite Barack Obama's campaign and a former campaign manager and political columnist. They go beyond the usual chatter on politics, news, science, and books. It's politics and everything beyond. On Beyond Politics, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Broadcasting live on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, and in the evenings on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to be with you today. Matt and Patrick here, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Patrick, how are your brackets look? Did you do a bracket? You didn't do a bracket this year for the NCAA tournament, did you?
I didn't, but I should have because the lack of upsets has been pretty apparent this year.
So I have done three. I am not one of these people that does one and I'm done. I'm better than most people. I think some people I know, I've got my 20 brackets. You do? When did you have time to fill out 20 brackets? But they do. I've got three. My ESPN one is garbage. That one is, I'm in 17th million place and that's not going to get any better. The Yahoo bracket I did, I'm a little bit better, but not a lot better. I think I've got my final four still left. I only have six of the final eight teams left, though. So I don't think that's going to come through for me. I do have another one that's a little bit interesting. After the first 2 days, I was looking on Saturday morning. I was in fifth place on that bracket. I was in second place in that bracket, behind about 20 other people in first. I was tied for second. I'm currently in, I think it's fifth or sixth place. I'm not sure how that's going to go, but yeah, I'm hoping. This weekend, did you have a nice weekend? Did you do anything fun?
Yesterday, I just kind of hung out at home. Not a whole lot of exciting things happening.
Well, I hung out at home too. We get the weather. I'll get to that in the 4 o'clock hour, but, I did watch one of the Oscar films was on Hulu. It's Anatomy of a Fall, and it takes place in France. A lot of it is in English, though. A lot of it's English, but there are a lot of subtitles here, and it is a very interesting movie. And I don't want to say anything. Do I think it's better than Oppenheimer or Poor Things? No. I thought both of those films and Barbie, Barbie, I think is absolutely, that movie could have gone a million ways from Sunday wrong. And Greta Gerwig was brilliant to get that movie put out the way it did. So I think it was underestimated, underrated as far as a quality of film. There were some films which were better, though. This film is very good. The lead actress was nominated for an Oscar for her role in this. I can understand why. It feels like you're watching a documentary. And I had to keep reminding myself, these are actors. They were so good at just conveying just random people that you see. It was unbelievable. I recommend it. But I will say this. I just talked to Grand Poobah Chad here at the Mothership radio station. I said, you need to watch it with someone. Watch this movie and watch Anatomy of a Fall with someone and be prepared to sit and communicate with them afterwards, because I guarantee you, you will have a lot to talk about. You will have a lot to talk about that, because that's one, and that's all I'm going to say. But that's one that is you will talk about it for a week afterwards. My wife and I saw it. I have been talking with her ever since about it. I'm going to keep it quiet like a development project in Duluth. I'm going to keep it quiet. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. So a little bit of breaking news before I get into some larger stories today. First of all, and what is, yeah, gosh, is there anything more pathetic than the way our society bends to belly aching wealthy people that feel as if this is, it's wrong to hold me to the same standards as anybody else. Ugh. In case you missed it earlier today, former President Trump, yes, that large orange dirtbag, he is not the real Slim Shady, was facing Monday deadline to post a $464 million bond to his New York civil fraud case when the New York appeals court agreed to slash it by nearly $300 million. Now, I want to remind people, he himself on Friday bragged he had $500 million in cash just sitting around. He himself said he had that. Why are you giving? I mean, he says he's got the money. They'll make him put the money up. Unbelievable. The appeals court also extended by 10 days Trump's deadline to post a reduced $175 million bond. The temporary reprieve staved off the worst-case scenario for the likely GOP presidential nominee. Before the appeals court ruling, failure to post the bond by Monday deadline could have led New York Attorney General Letitia James to freeze Trump's bank accounts, move to seize assets. We were waiting for that. Okay. He's bragging he has the money. And the reality is I think he does have the money for this. But if you've not paid attention to the fundraising numbers that have come through for Trump and the rest of these Republicans, they are way behind Joe Biden and the Democrats. They are sucking canal water as far as fundraising. I mean, it's like five times more money. Joe Biden has got like five times more money sitting on by than the Republicans and Trump do for this campaign. It's stunning to see that kind of a gap. You know, I don't think Trump has anyone else to blame but himself, because this constant desire for him to go and see, here my gold sneakers, look at these high quality sneakers, not guaranteed to not fall apart, not really gold, don't touch them with human skin, my sneakers. The fact that he keeps gouging his supporters who don't have the most money anyway. And by the way, this is one of my favorite things now with any kind of Trump rally, is the people out there saying the cost of things is too expensive. And the reporter looking is like, how much money worth of Trump gear are you wearing right now? Oh, about $1,000. I love them, but things are too expensive. Oh, okay. So he has no one to blame for his fundraising problems when it comes to this. I think he has more than enough money. He's holding it in reserve because he knows he needs some for this election. And a reminder, his only option to not be held accountable and lose pretty much everything probably is to win the presidency. Which, that concern, if you can imagine, if you know, you know. You know where I'm thinking on this. I'm scared to death of what's going to happen when it comes clear that he is not going to win. So, yeah, I think I'm upset about this because I think he has the money. He brags he has the money. So he has to have a few buildings seized. Who cares? He should be treated like everyone else. The appeals court, I'm sorry, I disagree with this. Trump's lawyer said last week that securing a $464 million bond had been impossible after they approached more than two dozen companies and none were willing to cover the amount. It tells you everything about him right there. More than 30 bond companies turned down his lawyer's request to guarantee the bond, the New York Times reported. No company would accept his real estate as collateral and only accept cash or cash equivalent. His inability to secure a bond under those terms at the very least suggests he lacks access to large amounts of liquid assets, which is not unusual. He's a real estate developer. Most real estate people I know actually have a ton of money, but it's all tied up in buildings. And, you know, if you look at, and I'm not saying I know them, but if you follow real estate, you follow this, most of the people, especially within Chicago, Minneapolis, St. Paul, you look at these large builders, a lot of their money, they have a lot of wealth, but a lot of that money is tied up in buildings. And that's not unusual. So it doesn't surprise me. What surprises you is the amount of credit he has clearly on some of these buildings that makes it to where they're basically useless as a a property for leverage. He posted a nearly $92 million bond earlier this month to appeal the $83.3 million damages he was ordered to pay E. Jean Carroll. He said on Truth Social last week he does have $500 million in cash, a substantial amount of which he intended to use on his presidential campaign. Trump's lawyers have claimed to secure the bond without put forth 120% of the judgment, more than $550 million. So, yeah, it's once again the world takes a petulant man-child and caves to him and gives him a, you know, an out which he just does not deserve at this point. And it that is deeply disappointing. I really do. I just think that is deeply disappointing and just a bad sign of our society. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And I'm dead serious. I really do feel as if that is it shouldn't. He shouldn't have this kind of advantage that most other people will not ever get. So I wanted to also bring up as well, Florida now has passed this law, which basically says that you cannot be under, I think it's under the age of 14, you cannot be on social media. And if you're 14, 15 years old, that you have to have parent approval to be on certain social media. And already it's people are, you know, they're just waiting for the lawsuit. I find it hard that this is the same Republican Party that for years said government shouldn't be regulating, guns, because that's overreach. That's government overreach. That's government sticking their nose in your personal life that they shouldn't be doing. Personal responsibility should be the only thing that matters. What was the Reagan thing? I'm the greatest lie that he says that I'm from the government and I'm here to help. He's like, okay, government shouldn't be involved in this stuff. Funny, when it's their enemies, they can't government up fast enough. And let's make sure once again, this is seeming to go in conjunction with all the other stuff I said, including, by the way, the great Cliff Schechter posted up on his Blue Amp channel on YouTube the video of me talking about this is the attack on TikTok by Republicans about something dangerous, or is it because they get upset? They're trying desperately to find a way to be able to change how Generation Z looks at them. And so now you've got Elon Musk owning Twitter. You've got Munchen basically saying he wants to buy TikTok. You've got Florida and Texas now are regulating social media for young people. This is by design. This is by design. And clearly I don't know how you're going to get around the freedom of speech stuff. I mean, I guess, you know, we do have R-rated movies. I guess you can make an argument there, but it's pretty arbitrary. I mean, you know, I think in Florida, they don't ban you from being on Twitter, but Twitter's got tons of porn and all sorts of things on there, too. So I don't know where you're going to go with that. So anyway, I'm going to get to a main point when I come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on a Monday. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. Good to have you with us today. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And I'm going to go in three different directions on this next issue. I wanted to start off, though, with this one undeniable trait of the modern Republican and of MAGA Republicans. And I think this is an underestimated and, as far as evaluating MAGA, an underappreciated element of the MAGA mentality. And that is their desire to bend reality to their whims. That if they say the sky is green, that not only can you not disagree with them in any capacity, because if you do that, you're violating my freedom of people, but then they expect other people to validate their claim. And in a lot of reasons why is because then it gives them validity and allows them to avoid consequences for that claim. That's a main element of what this is all about. It's about deflection. To basically be able to say, I want to be able to say something. I down deep inside know it's crazy. I know it's not real, but I so desperately want it to be real. What I'm going to do is force or try to force other people to validate it, and then I can say, it wasn't me. They said it was okay. That sort of thing. And so far, they're not having a lot of success with that because there comes a point where reality kicks their ass, for lack of a better way to say it. It just does. Reality is reality. And much like, and we saw, I think, this play out in 2021 extensively over and over and over again when Republicans would walk in and say, we think the election was stolen. And the judge would say, okay, well, where's your evidence? We don't have any. Well, okay, I'm not going to overturn an election by you guys just thinking it was over. It was you know, fraudulent. You need to give me evidence of it. Well, no, we don't have any, but give us all the voting machines and leave us alone in a room for 6 weeks and we'll come out with the evidence we know we're going to find. And then the next thing you hear is the gavel hit the top of the desk and they say case dismissed. And that's the end of it. Because at that point, what was the case? They kind of knew what they're saying is a lie. They just try to scream it as loud as possible. But when they got to the point where they got to they had to present the reality of it, they couldn't do so. And so reality kind of kicked them back and said, no, it doesn't exist. Let me give you a first example of this, because I got a few of them for you today. The first is Jim Jordan. Yes, that Jim Jordan. Guys, that guy's like a walking restraining order. Anyway, Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan in Ohio seemed to have an uncomfortable moment with 60 Minutes on Sunday night segment. Jordan argued against social media companies taking down inaccurate posts, saying that the American people should figure out what's true and what's not. Well, what's about this idea that the 2020 election was stolen, asked correspondent Leslie Stahl. And by the way, you're going to go mess with Stahl. Good luck with that. You think that these companies should allow people to say that and that individual can make up their own mind? I've not said that, said Jim Jordan, who's on the record pushing conspiracy theories about the 2020 election. What I've said is that there were concerns about the 2020 election, and I think Americans agree with that. And Stahl very quickly, no, they don't. Reality smacking him in the face. I don't think that there were concerns. You don't think there were concerns with the 2020 election, he said? Most people don't question the result. That's all I'm saying, Stahl said. Fair enough, said Jordan. Then it got awkward. They don't question whether Biden won or not, she said. Jordan was silent. Right? She asked. Jordan remained silent. Right? Jordan looked at her very puzzled. Most people don't question the outcome, she said. Finally, Jordan realizing, like I said, they know down deep inside the lies they are pushing are lies. And then you get someone like Leslie Stahl, who is just such a good journalist, who basically pantses Jim Jordan in front of America. And basically, Jim Jordan can't. Basically, he can't get out of his own way. He has to admit, no, you're right. Joe Biden won the election. But I want to go back to an earlier statement here, because once again, what is he trying to do? Well, first of all, I want to make sure we understand something about conservatives. Conservatives try to get anything that they don't like on social media blocked all the time. They are the biggest freaking snowflakes. They get so upset when someone puts a correction on one of their tweets or posts or whatever the case may be, because they don't want people questioning whether or not what they say is real. And so they get furious about this stuff. The reality is they themselves, they want to basically be able to stop people. The greatest example of this is Elon Musk himself, who, when he bought Twitter, said, I'm going to have this as freedom of speech, and then went and proceeded to basically block multiple accounts that basically he didn't like, including the one that tracked his jet, which is, by the way, on Threads, and you can track his jet on Threads right now. It's right there. He posts all the same things. But the reality is that's just who these guys are. It's not about freedom of speech. It's freedom for their kind of speech. But you see, is even Elon Musk has his own limits. I brought up in that video clip that Cliff shared on Blue Am channel, I brought up the Taylor Swift example, that all of a sudden people were putting out AI-generated disgusting images of Taylor Swift. And Taylor Swift's legal team swooped down on Elon Musk so dang fast, it was going to be called Taylor after that. It wasn't going to be Twitter anymore. It was going to be Taylor because she was going to own it. And immediately he realized what? He is a company. This is, it's his company, but it's his company. And that the buck stops with him. And that at the end of the day, if he doesn't control this stuff, he is responsible for the damage done. You and me, Patrick, Brett, any of the people here, we basically say something, he doesn't care. Taylor Swift unleashes her litany of lawyers, and guess what? Done. So that is, at the end of the day, these social media companies are companies, and there's accountability. It isn't a town square. There is no town square on the internet because someone has to host the platform. And the minute you do that, that's not a town square. That's somebody's house. And you have to understand that. And so that these people that run these social media companies, they, if it comes down to where they are going to get in trouble for basically allowing things to be posted on their site, they're going to limit that stuff. And that's the case. When it came to inaccurate posts, lies about vaccines, lies about COVID, lies about the election, lies about Trump, lies about Joe Biden, and they take these things down, that's not because they have a political point of view. It's that if they allow that stuff to stay up there unfettered, then they themselves take accountability for it. And going back to this earlier paragraph, Jordan argued social media companies taking down inaccurate posts against that. He argued that they should not take down inaccurate posts, that basically those posts should be there, not because they're true, but because it gives their lies credibility for them to be to force the social media companies to keep them up there. That's all this is about. It's trying to force a third party to validate their claims. And once again, reality smacks him back. In this case, it was Leslie Stahl, and that was a that was like Gyllenhaal in Roadhouse. That was just smacking him around. We'll take a break. Come on back. I got two more on this one when we come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Broadcasting in the evening on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk and in the afternoon on Minneapolis St. Paul's AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. Good to have you here, 952-946-6205. So once again, I'm talking this hour about three stories that have come up in regards to the desire by conservatives to make their lies reality, regardless of what reality is. And not only do that, but get other people to validate their reality, their version of reality, so that they can basically wash their hands of any culpability of it. They're looking for the people to validate their ignorance. And this is something I just mentioned with Jim Jordan. He basically, he doesn't want people, you know, these private companies, these social media companies, to basically edit anything, that if it's a lie from the Republicans, that they have to put it out there as a truth, and by doing so, stand by that truth as if it was a truth, because then they can say, well, see, Twitter posted it. It's a common thing, and this is something they try to do. And what happens is reality has a tendency of striking back, and it strikes back pretty hard. Let me bring out a blast from the past for you. How about that? The Supreme Court on Monday declined to hear the case of former Kentucky high school student and supporter of Donald Trump, who said he'd been a victim of cancel culture after a video of his interaction with an elderly Native American man went viral in 2019. That decision leaves in place a lower court's dismissal of a massive libel lawsuit filed by Nicholas Sandman against Gannett, the parent company for USA Today, and other news outlets and their coverage of the incident. Sandman argued he was defamed by the reports on his confrontation with Native American rights activist Nathan Phillips at the Lincoln Memorial in January of 2019. I think we all remember this. A video of Sandman, then 16, and a student at Covington Catholic. Sorry. in northern Kentucky. Standing nose-to-nose with Phillips went viral and unleashed a firestorm of internet criticism that the student's conduct was racially motivated, which Sandman denied. Phillips was attending an Indigenous People's March while Sandman was walking in the March for Life event. Sandman filed lawsuits against 8 media outlets, including the New York Times, ABC News, CBS News, Rolling Stone, seeking a combined $1.25 billion for their coverage of the event. A federal judge in Kentucky dismissed the suit in 2022, ruling that Phillips' statement that Sandman blocked him and wouldn't allow him to retreat, as reported by the media, was Phillips' opinion, for which they can't be sued. So basically, he was suing them because Phillips, the Native American man, said that Sandman had blocked him and would not allow him to retreat. Yeah, if you're saying to yourselves, like, okay, what's his case? Exactly. What's your case? They're just reporting the one side of it, which is Phillips' statement that, no, he felt as if he could not leave. And he's there for an Indigenous People's March. He's not there to necessarily clash with you, but you can't undeny that that group got in his face. And so he says that Sandman blocked him and wouldn't allow him to retreat. Them reporting that reality, at least from Phillips' point of view, caused him to basically file suit saying they were presenting me in a false light. The Cincinnati-based 6 U.S. Court of Appeals upheld the judge's dismissal. In Sandman's unsuccessful petition to the Supreme Court, his lawyer said the case has come to epitomize the high watermark of the cancel culture. Oh, not that. You mean you're going to actually judge me by my actions on this planet? How dare you? Sandman, his lawyer said, was transformed from a quiet, anonymous teenager into a national social pariah, one whose embarrassed smile in response to Phillips' aggression became a trigger of anger and hatred. That happened because the media's careless failure to investigate Phillips' description of the encounter, his lawyer told the court. By the way, and so, and once again, they're saying, and should be noted, this case was just taught. The Kentucky judge threw it out. The Court of Appeals didn't find anything. Supreme Court. That Supreme Court even said, okay, no, go away. There's nothing here. And basically that he says that they should have, I don't know. I mean, the careless failure to investigate Phillips' description of the encounter. Are you saying, I mean, they asked him, he said what he thought. Are you then what? I mean, we're supposed to go on a character assassination of the guy? Is that what your whole argument is that you should have ignored him? Why should they have ignored him? Was it because he was Native American? I don't quite get where you're going with this. And I think this is the whole point of the case. Is like, so he said what he felt. They reported it. You don't like that doesn't mean the news outlets failed. The suit became a cause celeb for the conservatives and talk show hosts. Then President Trump defended Sandman and his fellow student on Twitter, claiming that he had been smeared with false reports. And he knows about smearing. Have you seen what he does with the ketchup? Oh, my God. False reports of the media. In a speech by the 2020 Republican National Convention, Sandman accused the media of trying to cancel him because he backed Trump. In 2019 video that went viral, Sandman was shown wearing one of Trump's MAGA hats while smiling at Phillips, who was beating a drum and chanting. Some social media at the time claimed the incident was racially charged on the time part of the white teenager, which Sandman and other witnesses disputed. Sandman sued, saying the news coverage had unfairly defamed him. I want to remind people, if I, back in 2019, talked about this, I would have gotten 20 posts from people saying, "Add Matt McNeil to the pile of people getting sued, taking every dime he's got. He's going to own half the media of this country by the time he's done." Funny story. No, that didn't happen. But they were fantasizing about this. Not because once again, and whether it was Sandman or his supporters, it didn't matter what the reality was. They wanted their version of reality to be real. And in this case, they wanted the news media to basically ignore what Phillips said, without cause? I don't know. And only present what Sandman believed was he was doing. That's at least what it seems to be, and this is why the courts have basically kind of said, no, you can't do this. The suit, he sued saying the news coverage had unfairly defamed him, that the suit was narrowed by the judge to focus on only whether the quote attributed Phillips was defamatory. The media defendants were covering a matter of great public interest, and they reported Phillips' first-person view of what experienced, said the U.S. Senior Judge William Bettelsman wrote in dismissing the suit in 2022. But once again, what is it? It's, in this case, how dare you look at Phillips, because my version of reality should be the only one anyone filters this through. And by the media actually reporting what Phillips said, they're basically the bad guys, because the media needs to basically say, Phillips, who should be ignored, blah, 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 nothing else matters. That's at least how the impression I'm getting here. Needless to say, once again, same thing. This is a trait of the MAGA, which brings me to my final one of these. And yeah, nothing highlights this more than COVID and the COVID response and the amount of MAGA Republicans who were for vaccines until Trump left office. And then when Trump told them don't trust the vaccines, became against vaccines and against safety measures and all that stuff because Trump told them to. And so they wanted to believe that they don't need a vaccine and they should wear a mask and they shouldn't socially distance, that the world should just go on, and they want everyone to do what they wanted to. And I've talked about this, and for the folks in Chicago, in the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, they basically had people trying, they had every Republican in the state of Minnesota, they wrote a letter saying, how dare you medical specialist at the best hospital on the planet make decisions about medicine? Seriously, it was a hoot. And they had employees who were threatening to sue, saying, no, you can't do this. What they wanted was they wanted Mayo Clinic to take responsibility for their actions. And by Mayo Clinic saying, sure, you can come to work without COVID shots or wearing a mask or socially distancing, or if you're sick, could come into work, then they basically would be absolved from any consequences for their irresponsible behavior. And as a matter of fact, one thing I've always said is that, can you imagine one of these people who demanded I shouldn't get a mask or shouldn't get vaccinated, went into a workplace and then got sick, how quickly they would sue the workplace for saying, you should have kept me safe. Exactly. Nothing epitomizes this more. The Jim Jordan story, Sandman story, the story about ballots in 2021, the whole COVID adventure is the epitome of this. People who do not want to accept reality, pushing this false narrative that they shouldn't have to do things because they just didn't believe it was real or bad, and wanting other people to basically take off their cause célèbre for them so that they could basically absolve themselves from their own ignorance. And it still keeps holding on. Flory Smith, the actor who plays Lloyd Pierce on Paramount's network Western series Yellowstone, claims he was kicked off of a flight for refusing to sit next to a passenger who was wearing a mask. Now, there is obviously something else going on here. We'll get to that. Smith, 65, vented about the incident on an Instagram video on Saturday, telling his more than 500,000 individual followers that he didn't feel comfortable sitting next to a masked individual. You know, my social media people tell me that you like me face to face, but you know what? I can't say face to face what I want, Smith began his message. I got kicked off a plane. Where the heck am I at? Houston, Texas, because I told them that I didn't feel comfortable sitting next to someone with a mask on. He admitted that he'd been drinking while waiting at an undisclosed airport for 3 hours, but insisted he wasn't drunk. Oh, God. You've been drinking for 3 hours? Dude, you're sloshed. You're sloshed. But they threw me off the plane because I'm drunk. Because you people won't stand up and tell everyone what blank this is. Smith did not immediately respond to request for comment. The Tombstone actor's followers largely criticized Smith in the comments section for his reaction to a masked passenger. So let me explain to you and to all you other people out there. clearly this person could have cancer, could have some sort of autoimmunity deficiency. There are a lot of real legitimate medical conditions. And for whatever reason, death in the family, they're flying to, well, I don't know, Rochester, Minnesota, because they get medical care. For whatever the reason, they need to take a flight, and they could be mentally, medically compromised. And so by being medically compromised and having to take a flight, obviously you're in a plane. I am not medically compromised. I get on a plane, I'm wearing a mask the second I get in the airport till the second I get out of my destination airport. That mask does not come off because it's just kind of, you're in a flying cylinder in the sky with recycled air. Yeah, it's a little bit concerning. But that's just me. I don't have a medical condition that would say I desperately need to wear a mask. This guy clearly, well, he was drunk. I mean, let's be honest. He was probably drunk as a skunk. And he had a mask. And, you know, like I said, it could be just someone who is a cancer patient, for God's sakes. His followers kind of caught on to my point. Whether this person was visiting a sick family member or was just being extra safe, always be kind. You never know what they might be going through. I wore a mask all the time when my mom was in hospice care and traveling back and forth to see her. This post makes me sad as a fan. I liked your work on the series, but being drunk in public is absurd, particularly at your age and a public figure representing a successful franchise. A mask does not hurt you in any way. Please stop acting like a child. Another added, for the life of me, I cannot fathom why someone else wearing a mask is so threatening to some people. Many people lived with a loved one who is autoimmune and compromised. Cancer, heart disease, stuff like that. He's always had this anti-mask thing. So tell me, sir, where the mask touched you evilly. Oh, that's right. He didn't. It was just you were drunk. Once again, they want the airline to move him. Because why? The mask threatens me. And so if the airline basically puts him in a different seat, that's the airline saying his irrational behavior and weird reality is real. Commend them for not doing that. And, dude, just stop. We'll take a break. Come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Hey, I'm 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I've got a doozy for you coming up in the 4. All right, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Okay, we have to talk about this case tomorrow. The U.S. Supreme Court that overturned the constitutional right to an abortion will hear oral arguments Tuesday to access mifepristone, the pharmaceutical used to both medical abortion and miscarriage care. 9 justices will then decide whether to leave access to the drug intact or require the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to revert prescribing instructions on where to place it that were in place before 2016. The court decision will affect the entire country, including states that have sought to shore up access to reproductive rights following the Dobbs ruling, which, once again, this is their first chance to say that individual states have the rights. That was their argument about Roe v. Wade. It should be struck down. It should be a federal standard that states should be able to choose. And there's a decent chance they're going to come on back and say, oh, by the way, remember when we said states can choose? We were just lying. We're going to basically just push our agenda. The Supreme Court opinion will likely not come until summer here, maybe late spring. Will land in the middle of the presidential campaign. So, you know, and just for a little background, medical abortion is a two-drug regimen that uses mifepristone and misoprostol, which is used 63% of abortions in the United States, according to a report released. The new data shows a continued trend away from procedural abortions and towards medication abortions, which is approved up to 10 weeks gestation, which have been steadily increasing since the FDA originally approved mifepristone in 2000. So there is this drug. Now, I want to make sure we understand the level of lunacy that would be the case, because the people that brought this case and the judge is a guy named Matthew Joseph Kaczmarek. This is the U.S. District Court in Northern District of Texas. He's an idiot. He's a moron because he basically pushed his own agenda on this. But he did so because of the organization that filed this case that we're basically trying to get rid of it and insist that it should be illegal to anyone who disagrees with this access. The cases that they cite, and once again, these are pretty much the cases that they cite to put this ruling into place, to question Mifflin-Pristone. The two studies have been redacted. Medical Journal has retracted two studies examining the safety of the abortion pill Mifflin-Pristone after a federal judge in Texas has cited them when ruling that the drug should be taken off the market. The studies both retracted because of methodology problems and conflicts of interest. So basically, they said they did their due diligence. When they started investigating, if they had, they realized they hadn't done their due diligence. And henceforth, these were more opinion pieces than actual medical pieces. The other thing which should be noted is the people that were behind these studies were part of these anti-abortion medical groups. One of the things they have to put forth is, are they part of these groups? And they lied about that. They said, no, we weren't. When it was found out after a fact, pretty much everyone behind these studies had an agenda. And so they didn't do their methodology. There's no there. This case was there. These are the court cases that idiot judge in Texas quoted when he passed his ruling. Since then, they've been retracted. All right. So there's no there. Let me continue with this a little bit. This is from the journal Science. Those conclusions were contrasted with hundreds of studies in the past two decades that have found that Mifflin-Pristone, currently approved by the USDA for use in abortion through 10 weeks of pregnancy, is safe and effective. So tons of studies that have shown it's safe. These two fraudulent studies were the ones that showed it wasn't. And those are the ones he quoted in overturning everyone else's studies. A third study, what was written by the same authors but not referenced by the judge, was also retracted. It was about doctors who prescribed Mifflin-Pristone. All three papers were published in Health Service Research and Managerial Epidemiology, which was published by Sage Journals. They appeared in the journal in 2019, 2021, and 2022. Once again, placed there by people with an agenda. The papers grew the attention after the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, a group of anti-abortion doctors and organizations, sued the U.S. FDA. In November 2021, the Alliance claimed that the FDA did not follow proper procedures in approving the drug more than two decades ago and that it has downplayed Mifflin-Pristone's risks. When filing its suit, the Alliance also asked for a preliminary injunction to immediately remove Mifflin-Pristone from the market. In court documents, the U.S. Department of Justice, which represents the FDA, described the request as extraordinary and unprecedented. The DOJ argued the plaintiffs have pointed to no case, and the government has been unable to locate any example where the court has second-guessed FDA's safety and efficiency determination and order a widely available FDA-approved drug to be removed from the market, much less an example that includes a two-decade delay. At no point has this ever been done before. The cases they quote, the studies that they quote as their evidence, are garbage. They don't exist anymore. They've been retracted. There's no there. A coalition of medical groups, including the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and the American Medical Association, described the evidence of Mifflin-Pristone's safety as overwhelming. So there you have it. This is a nothing case. It's never been done before. The justification they have for it has been done by lies with people, pushed by people with an agenda. And there's still at least a 50-50 chance, if not a 60-40 chance, that Supreme Court is going to outlaw the drug. 60-40 would be my guess. I'm going to guess it's going to be a 5-4 ruling to make Mifflin-Pristone illegal because of fake studies. And that's it. That's the entire thing. They're going to make it illegal. And they're going to make it illegal for everybody. Because that's the whole goal. It was never about states' rights. It was about stopping this at all costs. I think the lesson that we have learned is in 2016, you might not have liked Hillary Clinton. but you're sitting at home belly aching about, it's not the person I want, and there's no difference between her and Trump, was stupid. And now we're in this mess. Don't repeat the same mistake. For God's sakes, get out there and vote come November. Chicago, talk to you tomorrow. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hour 2 up next. Hour 2 of the show here on your Monday. Good to be with you today. Matt Patrick here. We brave the elements. Brave the... Can I just say, Patrick, did you shovel anything this morning, man, dude?
I wish I did not. It was not fun.
There was more water than snow, man. It was one of those snow shovelings that you went out there and you shoveled. And I woke up, I went out and shoveled, and then I needed about a 3-hour nap afterwards.
Although it was one of those days where clearing the car was easy because it was pretty much, because my driveway's on a slope. So all it was tap the snow and it just slides right off.
Oh, there you go. But then when it hit the ground, basically that became concrete. Ugh. I want to give my wife credit. She went down to the end of the driveway. I was like, did the plow come through? She goes, yeah. I went down. I was looking at some of the neighbors' driveways that hadn't been cleared yet. She went out there. She went gonzo with that shovel, man. I'm
a lot bigger and stronger than her. How come this hurts me so much more?
We didn't get as bad. Last night I went out and shoveled at, 10 o'clock, and it was already half raining then. And then this morning it was mostly raining as I was out shoveling. You know, it's such a March thing in Minnesota. It's falling. You're in a snowstorm, and that's all of a sudden you're getting poured on rain as you're out shoveling snow. They're saying we're only supposed to get, as this wraps back around and it shoots off, and there's some cold air that comes in behind it and stuff. And I posted Sven Sundgaard's Bring Me the News weather forecast on the social medias. Go check that out. There's a chance. It's not a big chance. It's only one model. But there is one model that was saying we could end up getting a bunch more snow tomorrow. I did make chicken soup. I mean, if we're going to go on out and have snow, I made some homemade chicken soup, nicely done, very tasty, perfect for this kind of weather. And kind of just snuggled on in. And didn't do that much yesterday. I hope you were okay. A lot of accidents on the road. You got to be careful. This stuff, the thing that was nasty about this stuff this morning is, even though it was wet, it would just, you know how when you hit that slush and then there's that slippery element? Had twice where that kind of happened to me. Nothing bad, but yeah, twice where that happened. It is what it is. It's a complete and total March snowstorm in Minnesota. This is what we're supposed to have. This is the state tournament snowstorm we're supposed to have. We missed it. But we still had the snow. So once it moves out, though, I think next week they're saying 50s again. So this is all going to be gone fairly quickly. So just keep your wits about you. Keep your wits. It will be nice here before too long. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So over in St. Paul, Patrick, they're having a discussion about safe storage of guns. And Warren Limmer, the Republican from Maple Grove, he brought up the counter proposal here on why we all need to be armed, safety off, round in the chamber, finger on the trigger at all time. I don't think anyone can deny the pure threat that comes from cows.
Also, there's another segment of our population that often requires guns in their occupation. I'm talking about rural farm people that are living out in rural areas. They not only have to have concerns about predation, but they also have concerns about their own domestic farm animals. Farm animals at times can be very dangerous. Take, for example, a cow who just recently had a calf. Mm-hmm. You even walk too close to a cow, and it'll take you down and trample you into dust. Mm-hmm. And many farmers have a readily available gun just for those emergencies. fumbling around with a lock while a cow or a bull or any other animal is going after your daughter or your son. You can't fumble around with a key or try and find the lockbox or put your thumb on a biometric key of some sort in your home while the danger is outside. This bill puts those individuals in even more danger.
Okay, cows. You know, Patrick, I don't know about you. The other night, I was down at Target Center. It looked like a peaceful night in town. And then I went out into First Avenue, and you know what I saw? Cows. A gang of cows roaming the city, looking for trouble. Okay, now, I don't know if you've ever been to historic Oliver Kelly Farm. I have. It's a hoot. Northern Metro Historic Site, good times, open in the summer. Seriously, the kids will love it. I was out in the field one time, and the historic farmhand says, hey, I got to replace this one board on the fence, so the fence is going to be down. If the cow comes over, just put your hands out to the side like I'm trying to sell Remax real estate and go, bah, and the cow will be scared. So I did. The cow actually saw the gate down, started roaming towards me. I said, you know, let's make a billboard of this. Ah! And the cow ran for its life. At no point did I feel a need to, where's my gun? It's a cow. I'm going to get Kate Bischoff credit here. The number of Americans killed per year by cow, 20 total. By cow, 20. The amount of Americans who die because of accidental shootings, 500. The cow problem doesn't seem to be something as much as I jest about the gangs of cows roaming the streets of Minneapolis. Cows are generally not a downtown Duluth, Mayo Clinic, Mankato State problem, per se. They're generally not. It's something you generally come across only in areas where there is cows. It's not, I mean, if I'm in the Northwoods, I'm not going to the wilderness and saying, wait, there's a creature coming my way. Is it a cow? I'm pretty sure it's not a cow. I'm pretty sure it'd be deer, wolf, bear, cow? Not really expecting a cow. Chicken? Be shocked if it was a chicken. But still, it's not a problem that you see pretty much statewide. But you know what is statewide? Accidental shootings. They happen everywhere, Warren. Minnesota has seen at least 5 kids get shot this year. It's March. It's March. It's March. Because of firearms not safely stored. 5 in Minnesota have been killed this year. But tell us, sir, when you were mugged by the cow. Oh, my God. A cow. We can't have gun control. We can't have common sense gun control because of a cow. Okay, you guys are empty. You know, I mean, you're speaking of shooting blanks, you guys on the right, is this really, I mean, is is it a cow in the shape of the Minnesota state flag? Oh, my God. Can somebody send me a Photoshop picture of a cow that's basically got the same pattern as the Minnesota state flag? Because if there's anything that gives, you know, Republicans, you know, erection nightmares, it's got to be that. It's got to be the cows that have the Minnesota state flag on their side. Oh, you got, what are you doing? What are you doing? Cows? Oh, those, I guess those Chick-fil-A ads where they eat more chicken, I guess maybe they're deceptive creatures. You know, I was out in a boat one time, and I hooked into a cow, and you know, it was going to take down the entire boat. Thank God my gun was on my side, safety off, round in the trigger, finger on the trigger, I shot that cow. No. And by the way, Warren, can I bring this up? Okay, so if the cow is trampling your daughter, first of all, nice way to train your daughter to stay away from the dangerous livestock, dude. That being said, you're going to just, okay, so there's a large cow and a human being over there. You're just going to start randomly firing off rounds. All of a sudden, you're Johnny Marksman. You're panicked in an urge. I mean, for God's sakes. It would seem to me there would be a lot better ways to get that cow off. I don't know, a cow prod to get the cow to move on that wouldn't involve you aiming a gun and firing rounds in the realm of an individual who's being trampled by a cow. That seems dumber than a brick, you idiot. But you know what the real threat is, Patrick, you know? Our society, we do not take the chicken seriously enough.
We do not take the chicken seriously. Or the turkeys. Where's the oh my God, the turkey's coming out of the alley and there were five of them.
Gonzo tried to warn us, man. Gonzo tried to warn us about those chickens. Oh God. Cows. Well, good luck with that. If you go up on social media today, I am not the first one that has brought this up. A lot of people have said, wait a second, did you just say we need to basically make sure we don't have any gun restrictions in the state because of cows? Yes. Yes, he did. Darn you. The cow menace. Yeah, tell you what. You know what we need to do? I'll tell you. We need to have a discussion about the cow menace and what we can do is stop them. You know, let's meet at McDonald's. Ta-da! To freaking da! As I munched down on a quarter pounder, you know, hey, what are we going to do about these cows? I don't know. 952-946-6205. Reason 9,757,000 that I'm glad I am in Minnesota. Governor Tim Walz supported Bill that would effectively ban book bans in public libraries, including those in public schools. The issue is a timely one. The American Library Association tracked more than 900 demands to censor reading material in the public at U.S. libraries in 2023. The ban attempts covered more than 4,000 individual titles. The organization is aware of 22 such attempts covering 45 books in Minnesota. Similarly, the numbers from 2022, Minnesota librarians say they've noticed an increase in recent years, typically targeting books containing LGBTQ or black characters. Yeah, as you imagine, I imagine. Those who have asked for the book bans have never been on the right side of history. Those have been viewed as being the folks who are on the heroes of freedom. They have never been viewed as people that were looking out for others, Wall said in recent event to help support the bill at the Como Park Senior High School. I agree with him wholeheartedly. I think it is just an absolute joke that you have this discussion even taking place at banning books, because the reality is that it's not about anything more than political demagoguery. And as I mentioned this, there was just a guy up in Pine County. I'm trying to find that story here really quick. This guy was he was basically violating young children for, I'm going to find this story, come on back, and just point out this, because as these people scream, the book's going to hurt you, the guns are okay, but the books are bad, their argument is always the same thing. It's the LGBTQ and drag queens are trying to destroy our kids. I'm going to give you a terrifying example of someone who's trying to destroy the kids of this state and in this country. And by the way, not a drag queen. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. Jeff is in Cambridge, wanting to chime in on the book bans. Welcome on in, Jeff.
Well, yeah, up here in, I'm in Cambridge, that's the Isani County seat. Up here, apparently books are more dangerous than guns. Because recently they passed a support the Second Amendment resolution, yet refused to support a resolution supporting the First Amendment and the right to read.
Well, and that's a very common thing because, and Jeff, you bring up an interesting point. And thank you, Jeff. I appreciate the phone call. You bring up a very interesting point, is that we have to start asking how much crime is allowed to go on in these Republican areas, because the only crime they're looking for is the crime that validates their political narrative. And that is a very big problem. Federal judge on Monday sentenced a 26-year-old Pine City man to decades in prison for using Snapchat to groom and abuse more than 200 young girls, more than a dozen of them whom he lured and raped. Chief U.S. District Judge Patrick Schlitz sentenced Caleb Vincent McLaughlin, not a drag queen, to more than 29 years in federal prison in what prosecutors called by far one of the worst online and hands-on child exploitation cases seen in recent history. The judge said Monday that the sentence was among the longest he's ever imposed, called McLaughlin's actions shocking even to someone like me, a federal judge who has been sentencing child sex offenders for over two decades. According to court records, McLaughlin used the Snapchat messaging application to exploit more than 200 girls between the ages of 11 and 16 between January 2019 and April 2023. The FBI has so far identified 26 minor victims, 12 of whom had been raped by McLaughlin, and continues to try to identify others. McLaughlin showed a pronounced sexual interest in preteen and teenage girls, incest, bestiality, and other disturbing behaviors. Power, control, and cruelty were not just side effects from McLaughlin in the scheme. They were the point, said U.S. Attorney Hillary Taylor, who wrote her sentencing memo in which she called for a 35-year prison sentence. So the question I want to point out here is that as all you Republicans sit there and say, they got green eggs and ham in the school library, we need to ban it, burn it, burn it, it's a book. How many of you are walking past a guy like this clown and saying, oh, that guy's got must have another cousin visiting him. He sure has a lot of cousins that seem to come on by, and it is not weird at all that he lives by himself and they only see him with young girls. Boy, oh boy, I don't think anything is going on there because he's not a drag queen, but if he was a drag queen, I'd be concerned. He's a white, heterosexual, straight man, so obviously there's no reason for me to be concerned about his actions. This is on you guys. I'm dead serious, too. You can't do this kind of behavior and not have somebody have seen something. But you guys are so micro-focused on cows and banning books that the real villains in our society are allowed to thrive within your ignorance and blindness because they don't fit the political narrative you want to attack. That's your problem. You guys want to sit there and talk about the flag is evil. You know what is evil? This guy raping 12 girls in a Republican community. And once again, I have zero doubt in my mind that people saw him and saw him probably doing things that would have raised red flags within any other part of freaking society, but because he didn't fit the stereotype they wanted to believe as the villain, he was allowed to continue his crimes in public without any kind of people saying, hey, you know what, maybe we should ask something here. Why is this guy always with young girls? Maybe we should call the police just to see, you know, maybe something's going on here. Finally, they got him. This is the problem when you only go on out and look for villains that fit your political narrative, is that the real villains are allowed to exist in this world and you can't, and yeah. I can't tell you how disappointed I am that you get this kind of willing blindness, that their red hot rage tempers are so focused on little things. I will say this. I have spent enough time out in rural Minnesota. You know, you guys got an epidemic out there of drug use. There is. And this is not just something unique to Minnesota. It is. It's not. But because you're only focused on black people in Minneapolis, you don't see the carnage that drugs are laying across rural America as we speak. Or you just don't want to deal with it. It's not that big of a problem when you have four overdoses in any given week in a community? No, because there's black people in Minneapolis. That's your entire argument. You guys are concerned about books, and there's a person actually running around in your community who is committing atrocious crimes. How many of you saw him displaying some level of behavior that should have brought some level of question, but yet, hey, he's not a drag queen. He's not LGBTQ. So clearly nothing going on here. Exactly. You know, cows and making sure book bans are illegal is good fun and all, but I'd be remiss if we didn't probably spend the rest of this show talking about Kathy Cargill and what has gone up in Duluth. Because I'm going to agree with everyone else, nothing has unified this state more than Kathy Cargill has in the last 2 days. We'll get to that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Monday. God, really had enough of your talk. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, should mention April 13th, Sexy Liberal is returning to Minneapolis. Stephanie Miller and the whole crew are coming into town. Got Steph, we got John Fugelsang, Hal Sparks, we got Frangela. We're going to have special guests. It's going to be fun. Pantages Theater on April 13th. You can get your tickets now. Just go to Sexy Liberal online. You can find the link to the shows there. I'm going to tell you, this week we're going to have tickets to give away. I got pairs of tickets to give away all this week. So listen for when we tell you to call in for your chance to win to go see Sexy Liberal, the Sexy Liberal Save the World comedy tour in 2024. And once again, we're the kickoff city, Minneapolis. Let's go fill up the Pantages for them. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. All right. So I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago we started bringing up this story because there seemed to be something really weird. And initially I think it was they didn't know who was buying up the properties in Duluth's Park Point. Now, if you've not been to Duluth, Park Point is this weird, kind of sliver of land. It's on the other side of the lift bridge, basically. It's part of Minnesota, even though it stretches well over Wisconsin. And it is just this spit of land that goes on out there. And it's, there's a lot of people that live out there. It's kind of a cute little quirky neighborhood. And I think the original story we read about this was they weren't sure who it was, but they were someone who was buying up a lot of land out there. We discovered it was someone from the Cargill family and that they were buying up this land. And now we've got some answers. But before I get into this, I want to share with you, one quick story. This is I have fairly distant relatives, not shoestring, but I mean, yeah, I got some relatives who have a lot of money. I mean, a lot of money. And we had about 20, 25 years ago, we had a family reunion on that side. And I was up in northern Minnesota at Esquagama with this crew. We brought everyone in. It was a lovely little get-together, and we were able to kind of see this extended family. And the patriarch of this family brought basically everyone out. They'd flown everyone out more than easily wealthy enough to basically get as many people out here as possible. And so they did. They basically brought everyone out. So there was a lot of people, and I want to make sure we understand, these are people that come from a wealth standard which they've never really had to worry about money at all. They live in a very, it's not even like Minnetonka neighborhood wealthy. It's, there's private neighborhoods where you don't even realize there's houses back there. You know, that kind of wealth. They generally just don't run in the same circles as the rest of us. They basically leave a very gifted and gilded life. And so, and some of these people I talked to, I mean, I'll never forget one of them, they had owned a sports team. I'm not an NBA team. I am not joking. They were a part of the ownership group for an NBA team. And they just sat there and it's like, we're bragging about it. It's like, well, but your team sucks, man. And I said this to their face. They did not like that. But it was true. Their team did suck. But they were not used to, maybe you should try winning. You know, I don't know. That might be your better option. I was sitting there by myself, kind of just, soaking it all in. And this kid came up to me from this very nice boat that was out on the lake and said, I need to get some drinks. You need to get us some beers and some Cokes and bring them down to this boat. And the kid started walking away. I said, I'm sorry, son. I think I'm not an employee here. You need to go up to the people up there. They're the ones that are helping out. And the kid kind of looked at me very concerned and confused and kind of went back down to the boat. And this guy starts screaming at me. I told you to get me my beverages. You go get them. I'm like, sir, I'm sorry. I don't work here. I don't care. You serve me. Like, what? No. That doesn't happen. You want to go get beverages, go get them yourself. I don't have anything to do with it. Stop being a jerk. What I didn't know is my father and his father, who were closer relatives than I am, heard this. And he stomped, his dad actually stomped over to him. And they had a fairly, I didn't hear it, but I could tell it was a terse conversation to which this guy came up to me, apologized. There was a misunderstanding. I thought you were an employee. It's like, well, I told you I wasn't an employee. Well, I just didn't understand that. I'm so sorry. And the guy made him apologize. I ended up sitting down with the patriarch of the family and for about an hour. And while we were there, just basically was constantly getting barraged with requests for money. I mean, it was really frustrating. I felt bad for the guy. And I'm, but that's what that world that they live in. This is why one of the things I love about the movie Knives Out, the Glass Onion movies, the Knives Out, the original film, there's a scene in there where Don Johnson is eating food and basically just throws a plate at Ana de Armas, who's the nurse. She's not serving people, but it was, you are here to serve me. You are below me. Here, take my plate. And if you haven't seen it, it's a subtle thing, but it's so brilliantly put in that movie. Knives Out is a very good film. But it was, once again, these people that have grown up in a lot of wealth, they have a very different perspective of the rest of us. That couldn't be clearer in what happened next with the story out of Duluth. After months of wondering and speculating, Kathy Cargill was buying up so many properties on Duluth's Park Point, the city's mayor and residents may have answer from the apparently peeved member of the billionaire Cargill family. Kathy Cargill told the Wall Street Journal, and I'm no PR expert, but I am stunned that she thought this was going to possibly go a positive way. Because I talked to 40 people in Duluth the last 2 days. I went and reached out to everyone. What do you think of this? Nobody likes Kathy Cargill up in Duluth. Nobody does. As a matter of fact, some of them have said they're kind of hoping she does build a place there so that they can go and annoy her. She told the Wall Street Journal she was planning on to beautify and modernize the neighborhood, but the pushback, including a message from the mayor, has made her change her mind. I think an expression that we all know, don't pee in your Cheerios. Now, note to self, I would not have breakfast with Kathy Cargill. There are a lot of breakfast options out there. Heck, just get a granola bar, for God's sakes. But if you get invited over to the Cargill house for breakfast, I wouldn't go. I would just, yeah. And by the way, you think that just questioning you about what you're doing is somehow doing your due diligence as the mayor of Duluth? Okay. I think an expression that we all know, don't pee in your Cheerios. Well, he kind of peed in his Cheerios right there, and definitely I'm not going to do anything to benefit that community, Cargill said in an interview with the publication. So she was going to modernize and beautify the neighborhood. That was what she was going to do. She was going to do this, apparently, out of the benevolence of her own heart. She was going to do this. But by merely being asked what she's going to do, I'm not going to do anything to benefit that community. I added emphasis. Wow. Wow. Get me my beverage. Okay. Reinhardt, a former Park Point resident, said this month he'd written a letter to Cargill asking her to meet, but had not received any response. So it's not like he questioned her. He said, hey, could you have time to meet? And she didn't even respond. The letter, which referenced the city's housing crunch, made clear that while he respected her right to buy the properties through the private market, the residents of Park Point had questions about the intent of the purchases. He then said he planned to draft another letter and ask the city councilors to co-sign it. So basically, you have someone in one of your premier neighborhoods buying up a ton of the properties. You're the mayor. People are having questions, which is understandable. What is she going to do out there? What are you going to do? He sends what sounds like a very cordial letter to her. Okay, so far you're kind of wondering what triggered Kathy Cargill. Reinhardt took to social media to promise residents the Points Parkland beach and street access areas would remain public. In his Facebook post, he also noted that homeowners can choose not to sell to Cargill. And he's not exactly, laying a scorched earth policy here. He's just basically saying, here's the policies. Cargill told the Wall Street Journal in a story that appeared online Saturday that she planned to build homes for some relatives, open a coffee shop, and fund improvements to city parkland. Now, mind you, she is saying she's going to do this, and at no point has she called the Parks Department. Or, obviously, planning and zoning in Duluth, because if you're going to build a coffee shop, even if they're giving it out for free, there's a zoning issue there that you're going to have to get a zoning right to basically be able to have a business on Park Point, especially if it's land that's zoned for residential. So she hasn't called them. She hasn't called the park people. And once again, this is her claims. This is not me claiming this. These are her claims. And at no point has she contacted the government, even after the mayor had sent her a letter saying, we would like to know what your plan is. She said she also planned facilities for pickleball, basketball, and street hockey. But the mayor's comments, news coverage, and the purchases and online of the purchases and online criticism triggered a change of heart for Cargill, according to the story. Once again, I am this benevolent person. I am going to upgrade your parks. I'm going to build a coffee house. I am going to, you know, fix these houses. I'm going to have a bunch of my relatives move in, and we're going to buy this. It's going to be awesome. What are you doing again? How dare you ask me? I'm taking my toys and going home. Okey-doke. The good plans that I have down there for beautifying, updating, and fixing up Park Point Park or putting up that sports court, forget it. Once again, I'm adding emphasis. She told the publication, there's another community out there with more welcoming people than that small-minded community. Wow. Good luck. No. Oh, I'm sure you can find someplace. And please, off you go. When you say it like this, are you thinking the residents of Duluth are going to march downhill to the city hall and say, how dare you violate Kathy Cargill's... Is that what you thought was going to happen? Because I don't think that's happening right now. I think the official term is bon voyage. Cargill's North Shore LS LLC bought more than 20 parcels on the Lake Superior and Sandbar, many at twice their estimated value or more. About half of a single-family house sold on Park Point last year were purchased by LLC. The median price of the whole house sold was $477,000. Cargill's comments left many Duluthians wondering about the fate of the LLC properties. Alan D'Artagnan, 68, has been a Park Point resident for more than 35 years. He said Cargill had been upfront with her plans about the Park Point Community Club. She may have received support. And that's the thing is, you know, if I don't know... This is the part that doesn't make any sense. He's exactly right. Imagine she walks in and says, you know what? I've been buying up properties on Park Point. She walks into a city council meeting. I want to give everybody a full update on what I plan to do here. And I would like to ask the city to see if they'd be willing for me to help upgrade the parking situation. I want to build a coffee shop out there. What do I need to do to make sure this goes as smoothly as possible? I think most people, it's like, hey, by all means, come on in. Welcome. You're all set to go. That's not what you did. Resident Rick Yeomans said he understands Cargill is a private person, but concerns from the residents who don't want to see any part of the city become a haven for rich people who money their way into creating things as they wish. Some took to social media to call out Cargill's attitude, a clear violation of Minnesota Nice. If Cargill cared about the community enough to want to improve it, Duluth resident Judas Barron wrote on Facebook post, she wouldn't have been so abrasive when people expressed genuine and reasonable concern for the fate of the neighborhood. Cargill told the Wall Street Journal that she's still getting calls from residents hoping to sell their homes, and she's considering more purchases. She said she also plans to make her family's vacation home more private with landscaping. These people aren't running me out, she told the paper. Wow. She is telling, just reading her responses tells you everything you need to know about Kathy Cargill. They can posture themselves all they want, but I'm not going anywhere. Some residents told Cargill's comments leave them with new questions and deserve answers. I just want to know, what's her plan now, D'Artagnan said. What happens to the property she's already purchased? Yeomans thinks he's thinking about her comments and making her property more private. It seems like she has more up her sleeve. I would agree with that. So, the most obvious one that I thought about was the easement issue. Because from what I've read on Park Point, the beaches are public property. Now, getting to the beaches, there are certain access points. But the beaches are public property. As a matter of fact, there was a few stories in 2013 about whether or not they're going to revisit the easements. And, of course, that went over like a lead balloon. And so basically you have access to the beaches out there. So you have a beachfront property. People are allowed to be on the beach in front of your property. At least it seems like that's the case for most of Park Point. I don't know if there are any specific exceptions to that. If I had to peg one thing which I think was the goal, was that I would have, you know, so, and once again, I think there's a lot of this is just bad PR by Cargill. I think that I'm going to be dead honest. If you would have done this, you would have gone to the city council and say, hey, we want to upgrade Park Point. We want to upgrade the roads. We want to do all these things. Here's the deal. We would like to at least in these residences here revisit the easement issue and make that private beaches. But that's the trade-off. We'll make these beaches private, but here will be the case. And once again, I am pure speculating that the easement is the issue, that they were going to try to overrule. And one of the things that you can happen, and one of the things that goes on behind closed doors, and I'm not saying that easement issue was Cargill's goal. I don't know what it is. I think that there is another shoe that's going to drop here. But if it was, what sometimes you'll get is they'll say, here's the deal. I will sue the city to get rid of all easements. And so basically then no one has public access on those beaches. Or you can let me have the easement. That's one way that in a case like this, a wealthy person might have approached it. And in a lot of cases, the city would have caved. So I want to make sure we understand that the city, if she would have kind of approached the city and want to do this, I imagine if the other shoe is the easements, that she just didn't want people being able to walk back and forth on the property. If that was the case, then if she's willing to make all these other upgrades, I have a hard time thinking that they wouldn't really legitimately consider that. Or if you approach it from a litigious mentality, once again, this is pure speculation that this is the other shoe that was going to drop. I don't know what the other shoe is. I believe something else was going on here, because the fact that just the city was asking you what was going on leads me to ask the question of why. And once again, you presented yourself as, I am this benevolent savior that's going to spend my own private money on upgrades for the public community. But now, because people just merely asked me what I was going to do, screw you all, paraphrasing, but screw you all. I'm not going to do it. I'll tell you what, more on this when I do come back. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Monday. It's the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. I don't know what's more popular today. Snow, cows, or Cargill. It's one of them. There, by the way, has been an update on the story. Duluth Mayor Roger Reinhart described as peeing in his Cheerios by Kathy Cargill, has ran this weekend in Wall Street Journal, took to social media with a clarification. For the record, I'm more of a pancake guy. If you know, you know. He posted this to Twitter alongside a photo of a lone cake with a pat of butter and a strip of bacon. Yeah, it's I have to wonder. So and if I understand correctly, and forgive me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe she has married into the Cargill family, that she married one of the heirs of the Cargill family. The Cargill family has been around for a long time. And yeah, there's a lot of things that, you know, people can definitely question about the business practices of Cargill across the globe, obviously. But this is someone who's married into the family. And is there. I don't know if that means the houses that they were going to build up in Duluth were for her side of the family or what. I'm not sure. But we're talking, you know, millions and millions of dollars worth of housing for, you know, a select few, for sure. I have to imagine someone within the Cargill Trust, the Cargill Company, a law firm, trustee, her, you know, maybe a family member, has pulled her aside and say, what are you doing? Because you see, as I mentioned at the beginning of this little diatribe, there's a whole world these people roam in that we never see. We don't see it. these people exist. There are you know, very wealthy people that live in the metro area. You don't see them that often. They might drive by you in a car, but you probably don't see them in there. You don't recognize them. Their offices might be, you know, something that you never access because they're private offices, the top floors of buildings. They go to restaurants. They're in private rooms at the restaurants. They are generally in exclusive areas at concerts or things like this because they've got money that gives them the access to create a world which they don't get seen. And right now, everybody sees the Cargill family right now. And I can't imagine many of the people are enjoying the fact that this is a villain a la a Dickens tale at this point. It really is. And everybody, I mean, it's like if you give people a reason to basically dislike you, well, that's going to happen. And you may say, I not care. And you know what? You've got the money to where that you can make that reality what it is. Is that you don't ever have to hear anything about any of this stuff. That's fine. And that's fine. But I've got to imagine the Cargill family and the Cargill brand, which have long had a status within the state, can't be too happy with how all of a sudden there is a public coalescing around a central villain and their name is there. I can't believe that it's going to be there. Once again, I get it. You may look at the mayor of Duluth as a minion beneath you, that the city council are minions beneath you, that the Duluth residents are just petty little specks, they're ants on the ground. Fine. That's your prerogative. But the reality is theory is, if you would have just gone and put this forward, I imagine they would have jumped at the opportunity to help you. It's this now. I hope you like boat horns at 2 a.m. That's going to be an observation. Native Roots Radio is up next. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.